From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk animals, like pet peeves and oxymorons. Those are animals, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure those are animals. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors and language experts Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, Kathy and Ross, we, of course, here on the show are language lovers. We assume you listening right now, you also love language to at least some degree, unless you just stumbled upon us somehow and you don't know what you're doing here. But something that I know about people who love language, including us, is that we all really like to complain about language. We love it, yes. We also hate it in so many ways. And so, you know, occasionally we like to bring up some of these pet peeves that we have and dig into those a little bit. And, you know, frankly, that gives everybody else an opportunity also to complain about those pet peeves or to complain that we're complaining. I mean, who doesn't love that too?
I never complain, Fletcher.
No, not you, Kathy.
Ever.
Not you. I meant everyone but you. Everyone but you.
But no, Kathy is gone. I mean, Kathy has gone as long as like 5 minutes without complaining, I think.
Wow.
That long, you think? Ross, you flatter me. But this is a good time to say, we want your pet peeves. We are asking, because we're starting to collect them, we want to do a big pet peeve episode. So if you could email us pet peeves or record yourself, Fletcher knows all about that. Mm-hmm. If you want to hear your own dulcet tones on the episode about pet peeves.
Yeah, that's a good reminder that you can always record your voice and send it to us, whether it's through a voice memo on your phone, or you can go to the KMUW app and click the Talk to Us button there. You can send it to us that way, too. We love to hear from you.
So let's start. The whole reason we thought of pet peeves is we got an email from Kevin in St. Louis, who seemed rather peeved. He tells us he got an email with the header, "According to the dictionary, irregardless is a word." Ross, do you want to go on with the rest of what he said?
I want you to finish, Kath, because there's a word in there that I have a pet peeve about your pronunciation.
I knew this is frightening me. He then went on to say, "Needless to say, I became apoplectic."
We've talked about this before, if you don't remember. Kathy always, and she basically got me starting to say it sometimes. She would say, it's apoplectic. It's apoplectic, but she always says apoplectic. And it got to the point where, you know, you keep hearing it and then you think about it and then you sort of put your mouth around it. And several times by accident, I've actually said apoplectic, which drives me up the wall. People look at me like, what are you talking about? Anyway.
Just send them to me, Ross, and I'll set them straight.
It is better.
Anyway.
Apoplectic is better than apoplectic.
Thank you. It's got more vip. Anyway, he said that he became that word. And he said, what's next? Will ain't be a word? I hope you could discuss this on an upcoming episode, as the word irregardless has long been a pet peeve of mine.
It is regarded, regardless of what people may say, as an incorrect word. And the problem, I'm going to go quickly into the etymology. The problem we have is we have in, which comes from the Latin, and it's a prefix, and it means not, opposite, or without. So we have in regard, but we also have less at the end, which also means coming from Old French and Middle English, meaning lacking, cannot. So we have not regard, not. So it's a double negative.
Right. And just to jump in really quickly so that people aren't even extra confused, the in you were talking about turns into an ear, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, Fletcher, you're right. In terms of the elision of the consonants, it turns into an ear, but it originally was in.
Right.
And then it becomes er. Right. So we have a double negative. So the question is, it's still in the dictionary put in as a word, but it's not seen yet, and I say yet very deliberately, as correct, even though technically it's wrong. Just because the etymology doesn't work doesn't mean that it's not going to be used to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of times etymology seems bizarro, and it ends up being accepted and fine. But the real issue is, according to the dictionary, irregardless is a word. And the key here is, what is a dictionary, really? Oh, don't you think? I mean, like, what is the role of a dictionary?
What is the role? Right, yeah. What is the role of a dictionary?
And one mistake people make often is they a lot of times presume that dictionaries are prescriptive. In other words, they say, this is a word, this isn't a word. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it does do that. But most dictionaries today basically look at what people are saying, and then they chuck it in the dictionary. If enough people say and use this word to mean something that normally everyone will basically understand. And in that sense, usually a lot of times with irregardless, it still enters the dictionary as informal, you know, considered
non-standard
or whatever. But my guess and Kathy's guess is that eventually, irregardless, whether we like it or not, and I don't like the word, but whether we like it or not, it'll probably be seen eventually as a standard word.
I gotta say something, and now, Kevin, don't get mad at me. I think I've heard irregardless so much, it's like, okay. I really mean that. I hate to say it, but I really think they've beaten me down. You know, this rock has eroded.
Well, and that's kind of what happens to language, isn't it? I mean, eventually so many people say it that it just beats it down and is now a word. And so, I sort of agree mildly with Kevin I don't like it, and I never have. And, you know, decades ago, I would have forcefully corrected people about it. I don't do that anymore, partly because so many people say it and it kind of is becoming an accepted word, even if I don't like it.
Right.
Here's the question that I have is, how long has irregardless been around? Because we find a lot of times that these words that we think are nonsense and shouldn't be words have actually been spoken for a whole lot longer than we realize.
Irregardless is not as old as some others that we've talked about, but I think it was the OED had it attested from at least the 1850s in print.
Yes, and it was in Harper's Weekly, actually, a major magazine. That doesn't necessarily mean it was frequently used, though. One thing I have to say, too, though, a lot of times, like, you'll see, you know, people said this in 1830 and they're still saying it. A lot of times words are, quote, incorrectly used, and people use it a few times. It doesn't really mean much. The key with the dictionary is a lot of people have to use it a lot of times, and a lot of people have to kind of agree by sort of osmosis that it's a word. And that's how it gets into a dictionary as a correct word.
And so it kind of going to the dictionary and saying it's in the dictionary kind of causes problems for both sides, because there are people who are fine with irregardless and point to the dictionary and say, oh, it's there. It's, you know, it's a word. It's fine to use.
It's real.
Right.
Yeah.
But then there are, you know, other people who get mad that it's in the dictionary. And it's kind of that blurring of the line between descriptivists and prescriptivists. Like you said, Ross, what is the dictionary for? And if it's just describing our language to us, you know, and the words people are using, then it would make sense that a word would be in there, and they designate it as non-standard. So they're kind of, they're telling us right there, you know, yes, it's a word people use, but also it's not a standard word.
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of important for us to recognize what the dictionary is actually saying instead of just saying it's in the dictionary and getting mad or justifying it that way.
I think that's a problem. I do think, as you just said, I think people have that like automatic, it's in the dictionary. Okay, it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, hey, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's as you just said. We always talk about register, when to use a certain word and when not to, and like how some phrases might be fine in casual conversation. They probably won't play as well in a formal setting or whatever. I mean, and then you've got like your irregardlesses.
I'm getting apoplectic.
But I mean, I think it's vital to understand that dictionaries are not the end all and be. If it's in there, it doesn't mean have at it, use it, you know.
Right.
And if it's not in there, it doesn't mean don't have at it.
Yeah.
I mean, Merriam-Webster did an article on how they choose words. And they also said a lot of times words that are specialized, they're particular to a region or a profession don't make it in, but they're perfectly good words. One thing I want to say, though, is interesting. We looked up, there was an article by Merriam-Webster, like, how do they choose words to put in their dictionary? And it was interesting because there's no standard. They don't have, like, this, you know, kind of, like, secretive panel that goes, this is a word, this isn't a word. They do research, and it goes, it's sort of informal, it struck me. They go to supervisors or whatever, they look at words, they read actively, and they look and see how often this word is used, and then they look to see how widespread it is. Is it all over the place? They look to see if it's meaningful. Does it really mean anything? For example, they use the, people have the longest word in the dictionary. They don't really call that a word because it's used only to say this is the longest word in English, you know, right. That sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
And then they decide. But they go, the one thing that got me was they said there's no committee, no advocacy, no meetings for new word inclusion, which is interesting. They just sort of osmotically decide.
Well, RED is similar. I'm sorry. I've got to like interject and say it's not only Merriam-Webster.
I was just defining what they said. And I think the key there is that English, you know, doesn't, we've said this before, it doesn't have like a group of people deciding, like the Académie Française, that this is a word.
I gotta say, though, I like this idea of all these dictionary editors, sort of like superheroes in a room, you know, and in costumes with like semicolons on them or something, you know?
With like sort of like, you know, like disguise too, so you can't see their faces.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, the secret cabal. This is a word.
Yeah. Okay, I gotta finish, though. Kevin also asked about ain't, if you recall. What do you think, Fletcher? Do you think it's in the dictionaries, plural?
Do I think it's there? I would be surprised if it's not there.
Right. And it's like, again, non-standard, but they're saying it's flourishing in American English now.
I think people are a lot less strict about ain't than they used to be. Or maybe than they were for a period of time. I sort of assume is that for some time earlier, ain't was fine, and then we all decided it wasn't fine anymore, and now we're moving back to it being a little more fine again.
We're also using ain't, I've noticed, a lot now as sort of a kind of a literary flourish or something.
I was going to say this. That's interesting.
I mean,
I agree.
Like, there's a quote here, the wackiness of movies, once so deliciously amusing, just ain't so funny anymore.
Right.
And we're aware of that ain't as being deliberate, and we're aware that that person knows it's not technically correct. It's a kind of a little too,
yeah,
that,
that's true. You know, I think even in something I wrote some time back, and this is a common phrase, and so I used it specifically because people know this phrase, but at the end of it, I think I said, that ain't it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny, yeah. Which always reminds me, why didn't Ament catch on? Because I always liked Ament. I always have. I always thought I should use Ament. I Ament tired.
I've always disliked that, Kath, because I think Ament doesn't roll off the tongue like Ament.
I love Ament.
Well, I think we ain't going to stick on this topic.
No. Oh, we're going to do Ross's pet peeve of late.
This one really bothers me, and I told Kathy, we go by, we mail off books. Our wife is the book dealer, and we mail off books to clients. And it's driving me up the wall. We go by a dry cleaner's on the way to the postal drop, and there's a sign on a dry cleaner's, and it has drive-through parking.
Drive-through parking?
Yeah. And so I looked it up, and it didn't help me too much. They said drive-through parking, also known as pull-through parking, involves pulling into an empty parking space and then parking in the empty spot in front of it without ever reversing. Which doesn't make any sense because this place also doesn't have that. I mean, it just has parking spots.
Wait,
and then the building.
How do you not know what this is, though?
I have no idea what this is. Fletcher, do you know what it is? No. This sounds bizarre to me.
Okay. Well,
oh, that's so amazing.
Well, I told Kathy, I said, isn't that bizarre? Drive-through parking? And Kathy, being the ever-supportive sister, said, are you an idiot? And Kath go,
I believe I didn't say idiot. I think I used other terms.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm shocked. Okay, Fletcher, I'm sorry. You and Ross are getting clutched into the same little group here. It's a place you go through the drive-through of whatever. It could be a drive-through. Okay, in your case, Ross, a dry cleaners, or it could be like a drive-through fast food. You order or you submit your tab, and you pull and park until the order is ready. That's drive-through parking.
Okay.
It's not an oxymoron. It's parking for using the drive-through.
But the key thing that bothers me about that is, like, when I go to the store, I park, and then I get out and I buy the food or whatever, and then I go back in and I drive off. Is that, like, buy-through parking or something? I mean...
No, but there's a thing called a drive-through where you place your order.
Yeah. And then they make you go park somewhere and they bring it out to you?
Well, if there's, like, a law so you don't back up the line, yeah. They do not do this in Spain. I just want to put that on there.
Here in the Midwest, we just back up the line. I don't know what you're all doing out there, whether it's on the East Coast or what. But
I don't know. I've never seen it anywhere else.
It's all over the place.
Well, I mentioned it to a few people at the university, and no one ever heard of it either. So maybe this is the one place in Canada with drive-through parking. Now I'm going to get, like, deluged with, what are you, crazy? There's this drive-through parking, that drive-through parking. I've never seen it, except for a year. Anyway, is that an oxymoron?
Well, apparently not.
Yes.
I still think it's nuts, but...
I agree with you, Flint.
We'll leave that part behind. We'll leave that behind.
So what is an oxymoron? Do we know?
I generally understand it as a phrase, let's say a two-word phrase, where each of the words contradict each other. Like
Correct.
We say jumbo shrimp. I mean, that's...
Yeah, you know. Which we're going to talk about, actually, because we can argue now that jumbo shrimp is not necessarily
right.
an oxymoron.
Yes, yes.
It appears to be one.
Yes,
right.
Like drive-through parking.
And oxymorons usually... are not related to dry cleaners, but they're usually related to literature. Figures of speech with contradictory ideas or terms basically highlight the tale or whatever. And we have that Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, with 13 oxymorons in a row. Oh, brawling love, oh, loving hate. Oh, anything of nothing first create. Heavy lightness, serious vanity. Misshapen chaos of well-seeming forms. Feather of lead, bright smoke, cold fire, sick health. Still waking sleep, that is not what it is. This love feel I, that feel no love in this. There's a lot of those oxymorons there.
Yeah, but it works.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many others. I mean, Hemingway, scolding, cute coolness, Byron and Don Juan, melancholy merriment, rocking around the Christmas tree in the new old-fashioned mm-hmm. way. I mean, but they make sense. What gets you with an oxymoron, I mean, I know it's a literary device, but it is evocative and you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You always
mm-hmm.
do get it.
Which also sort of bothers me a little bit about them, because we went through some real ones, or technically real ones, and they all have meaning that kind of goes beyond, to me, the sense of what an oxymoron is, like silent scream. Like, I instantly know what silent scream is. I mean, what do you think, Fletcher?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can be maybe screaming on the inside.
Yeah.
And you aren't even necessarily opening your mouth, right?
No.
The key, though, Ross, is apparently contradictory.
Yes, that's well said, Kat.
Yeah,
you're
okay.
Because I think that people tend to think of oxymorons as sort of silly contradictory a lot of times. You know
no,
what
well
I mean?
Said. Well said. You
know, I mean, like military intelligence. Ho, 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 ho.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or drive-through parking.
Ha, ha, ha. That's people being uninformed, but that's beside the point. But I mean, the key is the apparently. So I think that they're fun. Because they do seem apparently like jumbo shrimp. These are dissonant, but they work.
I think jumbo shrimp is a little different, though. I think only choice, for example, is a classic oxymoron that means something, in the sense that a choice basically means between two or more alternatives. But in this case, you kind of know the other alternative stinks, so your only choice is this. So it has real meaning.
Mm.
Do you see what I'm saying? Jumbo mm-hmm. shrimp to me is different because shrimp in a way, I mean, shrimp is here, I think, crustacean.
Right.
So we're saying it's a big crustacean.
Yeah.
So that really, to me, is like, okay, technically it might be called one, but it really isn't.
No, it's not.
I agree with you.
It's not,
you know?
Really. I mentioned it because it's the example people always use, and we understand mm-hmm. that. But yeah, it's not. I mean, in this case, shrimp doesn't mean tiny. Shrimp means the little
the thing.
Animal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, I think, yeah, because it's they cease to be contradictory because one of the words is, what is that, polysemy? Is that it? When that's like
yeah.
all the different, yeah. And that, like, pretty ugly. I mean, it's pretty isn't pretty ugly. It's kind of
somewhat
ugly.
Sort
of
right.
ugly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we go backwards, upwards again, though. But these are, I think, true ones, like grow smaller. Now, theoretically, grow would be, you know, getting bigger, and then smaller would be, but we can use it in a general sense, like we grow braver, we grow more afraid. And in that sense, it has meaning, even though it's technically, again, oxymoron. I think controlled chaos is one of my favorites. That has a real, I mean, what's your meaning? What do you take of that, Fletcher, as a meaning?
Oh, I was going to say I experience that every single day because I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, but I don't. That's a lie. The control part of that doesn't exist. So
pure chaos. Yeah, uncontrolled chaos.
Controlled chaos, let's say it's sort of like a jam session with a jazz combo.
Right. Good. I think that's a good one.
I like that.
Well, I mean, you know, there's the structure that holds it all together, but then within that, there's a whole lot of, I mean, it's not, I mean, it is kind of controlled chaos, especially if you've got a free jazz group, right? If you've got, well, if you've got like Ornette Coleman coming in, then things are going to get weird. But there is, you know, there is something going on that's sort of holding it in. And within that, there's what seems like chaos.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. What about this one is a toughie for me, exact estimate.
Oh, I really like that one. Let's see what Fletcher thinks.
That doesn't really bother me at all. An estimate, so in this case, an estimate isn't necessarily like a range. It's just, it's my assumption about what it's going to be. So let's say if we're talking about I'm going to fix your toilet, it can be that kind of estimate, right? I'm estimating that it will be exactly $500.
And it won't
be. No, it won't be. It'll be $800.
I think an exact estimate is like an estimate that's the best you can do.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just like being vague and approximate, you know, in that sense. I think it sort of works for me.
Okay, I've always used it, or if I haven't used it, I've heard it, not acted upon it or thought about it. When I look at it, I don't like it, oddly enough, because it's like, it's an estimate. The estimate can't be exact. This is the closest estimate I can do. This is my
closest. Yeah, I think closest is probably better in that case.
Yeah.
But I don't recoil when I hear exact estimate.
No.
I never have, and I think I will now. You know.
Oh, this is good, because usually on this show, we're relaxing a little bit about things. But now you're going to be more angry in the future.
It's about pet peeves.
It doesn't bother me. What bothers me is genuine imitation. That one always gets me.
I love that.
Or genuine
so
faux pearl. Genuine faux pearls is oddly enough not as much of an oxymoron to me as genuine imitation. Genuine faux pearls mean that they're real faux pearls.
As opposed to those other faux
I have no
pearls.
Idea what that is. I take it back. I take it back. What's genuine faux pearls? I don't know.
There was a sign when we were in Sorrenti, I think. I'm pronouncing it wrong. I know I'm butchering it. In Turkey. And it was genuine imitation watches. And they had these fake Rolexes and stuff.
Funny.
And I never was sure if they were being like tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, or if they meant like, hey, look at our fake Rolexes. They're genuine.
But anyway, let's go to the jumbo shrimp version. These are ones that we think that the meaning has changed so much that these were in a list of oxymorons that we don't really think they should be called. This is the jumbo shrimp set of oxymorons that we don't think so. Okay, pretty ugly, Kathy said. Poor health seems very...
Oh, yeah. Health sort of refers to our physical condition now.
Right.
Status, yeah.
Right. Okay, what about old news? That to me is news has changed. News means something definite now.
Yeah, that's old news. That was news some time ago.
Exactly.
No, I have no problem with old news. None of these, because to me, these are like cases, all of these, where they're no longer really contradictory.
Mm-hmm. Unbiased opinion, I actually do sort of. That one bothers me a little bit.
I get what it means, but I also believe there's not really anything, there's not really such a thing as an unbiased opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually. This one, I have no problem. Recorded live. I mean, that's obvious what you're doing. You're recording it, a live performance.
A live performance,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that easy. Oh, what about openly deceptive? That's interesting.
Ooh.
That's a weird one, huh? Where'd you find that one, Ross? Now I'm like...
I like that one. I think it has real meaning to me.
It kind of does. And okay, so you can imagine certainly someone who does all of their illegal acts right out in the open.
Yeah.
And gets away with it because they are doing it right out in the open. I can also imagine someone who you know is pulling the wool over your eyes, but they kind of do it with, you know, a sly grin and a wink, and they're so darn charming that
I agree.
I know he's deceptive. He knows I know he's deceptive, but he's too darn charming, and we just let it go by. Do you know what I mean?
That's interesting. I get what you guys are saying. I mean, technically, to me, this really is oxymoronic, because I mean, deceptive is you're hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing it openly, you're not deceiving, are you? I don't know. See, it was my theory always was when I was younger and bad, that if I was going to lie, make it obvious that you're lying, and you do the big lie, and then have the little lie afterwards.
That's always...
Ross, you knew that.
Oh,
that
was that's the standard thing to do. Yeah. get caught in the little lie while the big lie goes right, sails right on through. Yeah, definitely.
But if we take deceptive to mean something just slightly different, which is not that I am trying to put something past you that you don't notice, but rather I'm just trying to put something past you that you won't necessarily like.
I think that's a good point. Like if you're just doing something like wrong or
Or it could be something else to me. It could be the agency, the agent of deception, the person who is deceptive, could be deceptive and just not be very good at it. So he's openly deceptive.
No, I don't think so.
I think
that's just bad deception.
No, he's a bad deceptor. This is a deceptor who is bad at it, and it's openly bad at it. I don't know. I think
this deceptor needs to talk to me. I have a few tricks up my sleeve. I like the little twinkle in the eye, though, that Fletcher had. It's just like it makes it more fun.
A little rakish?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe Michael Caine in his prime days, right?
And that's what I was thinking, or I was thinking of like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, yeah.
What's his face?
Michael Caine also in that.
Oh, that's right.
There's also deceptively deceptive, which is an interesting...
Oh, I think that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
When you you openly...
Yeah, exactly.
You openly deceive to like deceptively deceive.
Exactly. Well,
I'm confused.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Cowell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.